jobs, of course, Gamble agreed. However, these new assessments factored in the fallout from both the coup attempt and Your Majesty's response to it. You mean our throwing a couple hundred of the highest-ranking and most connected members of Parliament, royalty, and clergy into jail on account of their treason, Greyland said. Just so, Gamble said and coughed. He motioned to Sabrogan. Dontellu is, bar none, the best analyst in my section, and her remit in the last year specifically has been modeling out the consequences of the flow collapse. She's going to take the lead on this briefing, if that's acceptable to Your Majesty.
Yes, of course.
Greyland turned her attention to Sabrogan.
You may proceed.
Sabrogan looked at her superiors uncertainly, and then back at Greyland.
Your Majesty, she said, before I begin, I need to ask you a question.
You may.
How blunt may I be in presenting my assessment?
Greyland smiled at this.
You mean, will we be offended by strong language and possible negative outcomes?
Yes, ma'am. One of our foremost advisors can't go a sentence without using the word fuck, and just spent half of the last executive committee meeting trying to convince us that the economic underpinnings of the interdependency were under direct and immediate threat. We think you should be fine.
In that case, Your Majesty, we're all kind of screwed. Greyland laughed out loud.
Now tell us why, she said when she was done laughing.
Some of this you already know, Sabrogan said. The collapse of the flow has begun and is taking out centuries-old streams that serve as the arteries for commerce in the interdependency. When they're gone, the individual systems of the interdependency will be isolated from each other. Inasmuch as the structure of the interdependency is predicated on all the systems being reliant on each other, this means that within a few decades, the human habitats in those systems will begin breaking down.
The Dalla-Cisla effect. Sabrogan nodded.
You have given Parliament a few months to devise a plan to mitigate this, but our analysis suggests that Parliament will not devise a workable plan in that time.
Greyland nodded at this.
Also, our analysis suggests that you have already factored this indecision into your planning, Sabrogan said.
Greyland looked over to Limbar, who shrugged. You said you wanted a thorough analysis, ma'am, he said.
What does your analysis suggest I will do after that? Greyland said, turning her attention back to Sabrogan.
The most probable course of action is that you attempt to commandeer some or all of the interdependency's fleet of starships to transport as many people as possible to End, which is the only planet in the interdependency capable of supporting human life on its own.
And how well does this work?
It doesn't, Sabrogan said.
First, it's deeply unlikely an attempt at nationalization on the necessary scale would succeed.
Guildhouses would balk and rebel, and you would likely be deposed, probably within a few months.
Second, even if the first scenario didn't happen, there aren't enough ships to transport every subject of the interdependency to End, either all at once,
Greyland raised her hand,
or in a scenario where the systems most vulnerable to collapse were evacuated first to other less threatened systems.
Greyland put her hand back down, frowning.
And third, the total population of the interdependency is at least 20 billion people. End has less than 100 million people. Its infrastructure can't handle 200 times its current population, or even a fraction of that number. For that matter, the ecosystem of the planet itself would likely collapse with the sudden, by both human and ecological timescales, introduction of even a few billion humans. In trying to save humanity, you would quickly kill the one place it would be able to survive.
That is, even if they could make it to End to begin with, Gamble said. We have to assume that Granny Nohama Peaton and the prophecies of Raykella have control of the flow shoals coming into the End system. They can destroy any ship entering their space before the ships can even hail them.
We're working on that, Greyland said. Even if you are, Your Majesty, that won't solve the other problems, Sabrogan said. Those are pretty well baked in.
So no matter what, billions will die. If your plan is to move them to End by ship, yes. But ma'am, it's not likely you'll be able to get that far.
Greyland frowned. What do you mean?
Remember that you gave me permission to be blunt, Sabrogan said.
Yes, Greyland waved her hand, annoyed.
Sabrogan looked at her bosses again before looking back over to Greyland.
I estimate that there will be another significant coup or assassination attempt against you within the next 3 months, she said. And that attempt is very likely to succeed.
It's no great feat, predicting a coup or assassination attempt against you, considering your track record since you became emperor, Ottavio VI said to his daughter. Thanks, Dad, Greyland said back to him. She paced the confines of the memory room. Ottavio VI's gaze followed her as she went. I didn't mean to offend you, he said.
You didn't, Greyland stopped and reconsidered.
No, actually you did offend me, but you're not wrong, she started pacing again. And yet you seem surprised.
I thought this sort of thing was behind me, at least for a little while.
Because you put in jail everyone who was plotting against you.
Yes.
That's not how that works.
That's not what you told me before, Greyland protested.
When I came in here and told you how I had everyone arrested, you told me I'd won. You did win, Greyland gestured annoyance.
And yet, here we are, Dad.
You won a round, daughter, Ottavio VI said. You're still in the fight.
I could abdicate, Greyland mused.
You wouldn't be the first.
It wouldn't solve the actual problem, though.
It would solve the problem of a coup, Ottavio VI pointed out. If you're not emperor, you can't be overthrown.
That's not the actual problem.
The actual problem is billions of people dying no matter what I do. That's not your fault.
It's not anyone's fault.
Greyland stopped again.
Wait, that's not actually true.
Gee.
The humanoid figure appeared. Yes, Your Majesty.
Show me Raquella the First, by herself, please.
Yes, Your Majesty.
There was a shimmer, and both Zhiyi and Ottavio VI disappeared, replaced by the image of Raquella I, the first prophet emperor of the interdependency. As always, Greyland was still a little awed by the fact that she could summon Raquella, or a reasonable facsimile thereof, at all. If Greyland gave it any thought at all, she would have to admit that being able to talk to any of her predecessors here in the memory room was an amazing feat in itself. But all the other emperors, not excluding her father, were just people. Massively important people in their time, clearly, but still people. Greyland, who had the same job as they did, felt no need to think of them as fundamentally better or worse than she was. Raquella, on the other hand, had founded the interdependency, as well as the church that the interdependency gave its name to. She'd had help. The entire Wu family, both as ambitious and duplicitous then as it was now, had worked hard to get her into her various roles. But at the end of things, Raquella was the one who had made it all work. That Greyland's conversations with Raquella revealed her to be no more or less human than any other emperor, immensely cynical and not in the least bit holy, did not lessen her predecessor in Greyland's eyes. If anything, it raised her up. Raquella had nerve, which was not a thing every emperor who followed her could claim. Greyland's respect for Raquella, however, didn't mean she couldn't be annoyed with her. Why didn't you build the interdependency to survive flow collapses? Greyland asked Raquella.
It didn't occur to us at the time, Raquella said.
How could it not occur to you?
We were busy with other things.
But you knew flow streams could collapse, Greyland said. Humans come from Earth. There's no flow stream to Earth anymore. You knew it had collapsed.
That was a naturally occurring collapse, as far as we knew.
It wasn't, Greyland reminded her. It was intentionally caused by the interdependency's predecessors.
True, but we had forgotten that when I was alive.
And even if it were naturally occurring, how does that even matter? You had evidence that flow streams could and did collapse for whatever reason, and you didn't factor that into the development of the interdependency.
It had only happened once.
Greyland gaped at Raquella. Seriously?
Moreover, by the time we were forming the interdependency, the prevailing scientific theory of flow streams was that they were stable and would remain so for centuries and more likely millennia. That wasn't wrong.
It wasn't wrong until it was.
Yes, Raquella agreed. But it was wrong 1,000 years into the future from when I and the rest of the Wus created the interdependency. You're suggesting that you're not responsible for thinking through the consequences of your actions. I'm not suggesting anything, Raquel said. I will note that humans are not great at thinking over the long term, and we were no exception to that. Neither are you, for that matter. What do you mean? You were just complaining to Ottavio VI how you thought coup attempts were behind you. But you hadn't thought out the longer-term implications of throwing hundreds of people in jail for treason. Now you're having to deal with the shame and anger of their families, their houses, and their organizations. How?
Greyland stopped herself from finishing that sentence. Of course Raquel knew what Greyland had said to Ottavio VI. Effectively, she was Ottavio VI, and he Raquella, because they were both Gii, wearing the skins of the now-dead emperors. Greyland made a note to stop falling for the pathetic fallacy at every turn. And anyway, as much as it galled Greyland to admit it, Raquella had a point. When she herself couldn't truly register the implications of her actions a few weeks into the future, she was not sure how much she could blame Raquella and the rest of the Wus of her time for not gaming out where the interdependency would be 1,000 years on.
I wish you had thought about the long term, Greyland said to Raquella. It would make my life easier now.
No, it wouldn't, Raquella said.
You might have avoided this particular problem, yes.
But you would have had other problems.
You don't know if they would be better problems or worse.
I don't know that there are worse problems than trying to figure out how to save billions of people from dying, Greyland suggested to Raquella.
That's not your biggest problem, Raquella said.
Billions of people are somehow not my biggest problem?
Raquella shook her head.
You've been reliably told that you'll be out of power or dead within the next few months.
That's your biggest problem. Or, at the very least, the one in front of you right now. If you want to save those billions of people, you're going to have to save yourself first.
Chapter 7.
Nadashi Nohama Peten couldn't help but notice that no one was having any of the refreshments. This was, on one hand, entirely fair. By now, Nadashi's reputation preceded her. She'd killed her own brother, attempted to assassinate the sitting emperor twice, and certainly anyone at her little soiree was by now well aware of the fate that had befallen Darren Wu. Nadashi felt the tiniest bit of pride that an entire buffet of comestibles lay unmolested. It meant people. These people. Who comprised among them that part of the interdependent elite of Hub not currently in jail for treason, had a healthy respect of what she could do to them with whatever resources she had available to her, right down to a single muffin or cup of coffee. On the other hand, it was also ridiculous of them. She hadn't laid on the table of food and drinks in the first place. Proster Wu, as the actual host of the meeting, had done so. He hadn't consulted with her on the menu. They should trust Proster, at least. Moreover, and more importantly, Nadashi needed these people. They represented the means by which her plans and causes might come to fruition. Because of that, she wasn't going to poison them. Here, now. Complementarily, although they might not be willing to admit it to themselves, they needed her just as much as she needed them. Deep down, they knew it, which is why they were here, not breaking bread with a murdering insurrectionist. All she needed to do now was to convince them of a thing they already knew. She could do that. And if she couldn't do that through appealing to their self-interest, she had some threats to deploy. If that didn't work, well, there was always tea. Later. Proster Wu, who had been mingling with his various guests, came over to Nadashi. We're ready. Everyone who is going to be here is here.
There are families you invited who aren't here? Nadashi asked.
A few.
That's a problem.
It's manageable.
You're telling me there are people who know what we're doing here, who aren't now implicated in it. Explain to me how that's manageable.
It's manageable because I say it is, Proster smiled. The families who aren't here are sympathetic to your aims. They just want to see which way the wind blows before they commit. Nadashe snorted at this.
In other words, they're cowards.
They might say they're hedging sensibly, Proster suggested. And in the event that anyone, here or not here, thinks of talking about this meeting, there is the fact that unlike you, they actually fear the wrath of the Wooz. They know crossing us means no new ships, no new weapons, and that their security forces may or may not have their best interests at heart from here on out. They'll stay quiet.
If you say so.
I do say so. Let me know when you're ready.
I'm ready.
Proster nodded and clapped his hands together and told his guests to take their seats. In a moment, roughly 3 dozen people, each representing a noble family and guild house, were seated in folding chairs. Nadashe noted each as they sat, filing away the presents of each for later. Most of the people in the room she knew, either from social engagements in happier times or because she'd sat across from them in a negotiating session. At least one of them she'd had sex with. It hadn't been great sex. The rest she knew from reputation. As with any civilization, the closer you got to the top, the number of people who mattered shrank significantly. At the level Nadashe existed on, the interdependency had the population of a small town. Nadashe waited until they were all quiet and looking at her. Then she nodded, went to the buffet, and fixed herself a cup of tea. There was a small murmur at this. Then she returned to the front of the assembly.
First of all, thank all of you for coming to this.
She motioned upward to encompass the room, which was in fact the cargo area of a spaceship under construction. The pretense of the meeting was that Proster, as the new and allegedly temporary executive director of the board of the House of Wu, was giving the attendees a tour of the house's latest tenor design in the hope of securing sales.
I understand this is not the most luxurious of all possible meeting spaces. She sipped her tea. I also understand that some of you might be apprehensive about cargo holds where I am concerned.
This got a couple of nervous laughs, a few surprised coughs, and a whole lot of muttering. Nadashe noted which of her guests suddenly turned to someone else with widened eyes, as if to say, did she just joke about murdering her own brother?
And yes, I did just make that joke, Nadashe said, answering that unasked question. Let's not pretend that you don't know my past sins, or that I'm not aware that you know about them. Time is short, and we don't have the luxury of polite whispers. I am a murderer, a would-be assassin, and a traitor to the Emperor, and with your help, I will be all these things again.
Louder murmurings this time, and someone stood up, as if to leave. Sit down, Gaiden Aiello, Nadashe said, more loudly than she had been speaking before. Gaiden Aiello froze like a small ungulate that realized it had been marked by a lioness.
You're already here. It's too late to say you didn't know why you came. Sit down.
Gaiden Aiello looked around, saw no one else getting up out of their seats, and sat back down, nervous.
Let me repeat what I just said, Nadashe continued. Murderer. Would-be assassin. Traitor to the Emperor. To the Emperor. Not to the Empire. Not to the Interdependency. And not to the noble houses and guilds that have built it and shaped it into what it is today.
Get to your point, Nadashe, said Linus Risto of the House of Risto. I don't care about your rationalizations. None of us do. Just tell us what we're already colluding for.
I was just about to get there, Nadashe said.
She took another sip of her tea and then set it down.
The houses and the guilds built the interdependency. Now, Greyland says she wants to save the interdependency.
What she means by that is that she wants to save its people.
Its people.
And, said Risto,
how does she save its people? They won't survive on man-made habitats for long after the collapse of the flow. There's only one place they can go.
To end, someone said.
To end, Nadashe agreed.
And how will they get there? She needs to transport them, and to that end, she will use every ship she can.
your ships, which you rely on to support the goals of your houses. She'll commandeer them if she has to.
And it won't work, anyway, Proster Wu said from his seat at the front. The House of Wu obviously has an inventory of every flow-capable ship currently under operation. There aren't nearly enough of them for a rescue operation of any size, and the ones that exist are currently spread throughout the interdependency. They are impossible to coordinate in the required time frame.
Not to mention every ship sent to End stays there, Nadashe said. The flow stream from End to Hub has already collapsed.
Not to mention that your brother Granny has already taken control of End's flow shoals, said Drusen Wolf, who sat at the back of the grouping. Speaking of coups, we all know what the Nohamapetans are trying to do on End. I see you trying to palm that card, Nadashe.
I'm not trying to palm that card, Drusen, Nadashe countered. I just hadn't put it down on the table yet. But you're correct. By this time, my brother and the prophecies of Raykella will have taken control of both the planet and the flow shoals entering into End space. So, even if Greyland takes all of your ships and stuffs them full of refugees and sends them to End, without specific clearance from me, they will be destroyed within minutes of arrival.
This got more grumbling. You said you were a murderer, Drusen said. You didn't say anything about genocide.
Please, Drusen, think it through. The planet can't support as many people as Greyland will want to throw at it anyway. Letting them all through threatens both the people who already live on End and the people who will survive the collapse of the interdependency.
Nadashe nodded to Proster.
Your turn.
Proster nodded and stood, turning to face the group. Before his demise, Darren Wu proposed to the Wu Board of Directors a plan that allows for the commercial, industrial, and cultural heart of the interdependency, he motioned to the assembled group to make it clear he was talking about them, to survive the collapse of the flow with its wealth, capital, and values largely intact. It's a multi-tiered plan that includes security control and enhancement to keep populations in line, even as the flow collapses, and new, advanced, flow-capable ships for the evacuation and preservation of what is actually important here, the noble houses of the interdependency. So, just to be clear on this, the plan is riot control for the rabble and passage to End for all of us, Drusen Wolf said, motioning to encompass the room. That's an inelegant way of putting it, Proster said. I thought we weren't being polite anymore, Proster.
Yes, Nadashe said, interrupting. She looked around. Not everyone can be saved. They just can't. It's not logistically or physically possible. Even Greyland knows this, probably. No matter how she feels, she has to go through the motions to try to save everyone, destroying the noble houses and the guilds in the process. She has to pretend. We don't. We can save ourselves, and in saving ourselves, we save what matters of the interdependency.
At a healthy profit margin for the houses of Wu and Nohamapetan. You will be coming to us for ships and security sooner or later anyway, Proster said to Drusen Wolf. This way, at least, you and everyone else in this room will be at the head of the line.
And what about the house of Nohamapetan? Drusen said, turning his attention back to Nadashe. Just how much are you planning to extort from each of us so we don't get vaporized by your brother the instant we show up in End space?
I regret to say that, at the moment, I have very little to do with the House of Nohamapetan, Nadashe said.
I'm aware of that, actually. My senior trade negotiator just came up against the House's current administrator.
Kiva Lagos.
You know her? Nadashe pressed her lips thin.
I do.
She's not my favorite person, Drusen said. And I don't think you intend to let her stay where she is for any longer than you have to. So I ask again, how much is the House of Nohamapetan planning to extort from each of us?
Nothing.
Nothing?
Nothing.
It was Drusen's turn to smile thinly. I am skeptical. No offense.
None taken.
Nadashe moved her attention away from Drusen Wolf and toward the entire group.
Here is the cost for each house here to enter end space. Nothing. I will give you passage for your ships, all of them, as many as you see fit to send. You will be given an encrypted verifiable code that establishes I have permitted you into end space. You get that because you're in the room right now. Others who join into our pact may get otherwise reduced rates depending on circumstances, but only you here now get this free passage from me.
If I've learned anything about the Nohamapetans, it's that nothing you do comes for free, Druzan said.
The passage to end is free, Druzan. But I do have expectations.
Which are?
Before I get to that, let me be absolutely clear what the plan here is, Nedashe said. In just over 4 months, the deadline for Parliament to come up with a plan to save the interdependency from the collapse of the flow will pass without Parliament being able to ratify anything. When that happens, and it will happen, Greyland will almost certainly commandeer all of your ships and whatever else she requires in a futile attempt to save as many of her subjects as she can. When she does that, she dooms all of us. It's as simple as that. My plan is to stop her. I will depose her, and because she is too dangerous at this point to keep alive, I will have her killed. Then we install a regime that is friendly to the noble houses and the guilds, and which understands what we in this room already know. We can't save everyone, so we save what's important. Us.
Nedashe looked around to see if anyone had objections. No one did.
So, then, here are my expectations. First, I expect your money. Lots of it. I will be handling the logistics of this coup, and unfortunately at the moment I can't pay for it out of petty cash. I'll be taking some from each of you before you leave. Everyone here pays in. Second, I expect your cooperation. This will not be the Baroque grandstanding coup my mother and Jason Wu attempted. This one will get messy, and I will need each of you to do your part. You will be graded on participation. Third, I expect each of you to recruit. Those of you in this room are not enough. I know some of you will want to keep this small, and others of you don't want to be seen persuading someone else to join a coup, but each of you knows what's at stake here. If Greyland has her way, we all die. Fourth, when the coup happens, I expect you to recognize and legitimize the new regime. Without your public allegiance and consent, the coup will dissolve into chaos almost instantly. This needs to happen fast enough that we compel the allegiance of those houses that are not part of the coup and crush any house that stands out against it. Nedashe pointed to Proster. Obviously, the House of Wu will stand with us. That will be a huge incentive for every other house to get in line. Druzan Wolf looked annoyed. Of course the House of Wu will stand with the coup. Someone in it, probably Proster here, will be the next emperor. Nedashe looked over at Proster. He nodded at her, a final confirmation. Nedashe looked back at the group. No, she said. And this will be my final expectation from each of you. Your allegiance, not just to the new regime, but to me. I will be the new emperor, the last emperor of the interdependency.
Book 2, Chapter 8. While the elite of the interdependency were making their plans to abandon the common people to their fate, the common people of the interdependency were beginning to come to grips with what exactly that fate actually was. It should be noted that common people of the interdependency were not fools. They were, arguably, the most educated and materially comfortable common people ever to live in any human civilization, going back to when the first human decided hoofing themselves across the African landscape was a pain in the ass and decided to stay in one place instead. The population of the interdependency were not fools largely for two reasons. The first was that the vast majority of the interdependency's billions of souls lived their lives either in cities hollowed out from the ground of otherwise uninhabitable planets or inside habitats floating in space.
In either of these environments, a large population of the uneducated and feral would be a clear and present safety issue for everyone else. The second reason was that the ruling class of the interdependency, favoring financial and social stability over having the lumpen proletariat trying to rip their heads from their necks at every opportunity, opted to have the interdependency's baseline standard of living one where no one starved, or was without shelter, or died of easily preventable diseases, or went bankrupt if they had a heart attack or lost a job, or both. For these reasons, the interdependency held no poor, or rabble, in ways that elites of previous civilizations would understand the term. This was great if your goal was keeping a large population of humans spread across trillions of kilometers of physical space reasonably content on a day-to-day basis. It was less great if your goal was to, say, leave these billions completely in the dark about the encroaching end of civilization that was likely to end in slow famine and death for each of them if nothing was done. They knew. They knew because the scientists analyzing the data that Jamies and Mars Claremont and Hatid Roynald had collected had come largely from the middle and working classes of the interdependency, and they shared information and data. They knew because the crews of the ships that plied the flow, who had pledged themselves to the guilds that the noble families controlled, were also from the middle and working classes. They knew because the journalists of the interdependency were from these classes as well. And they knew because the Emperor Greyland II, who lived her early life as the child of an academic, had in her wisdom or naivete, or both, decided to let the truth about the imminent collapse of the flow go out to the public. They knew, and they knew reasonably early in the grand scheme of things. But what did they do with that information? A large number of people looked at when their particular system would be entirely cut off from the rest of the interdependency, decided that it was enough time in the future that someone would probably figure out what to do, and then went back to their daily lives, only mildly more apprehensive than before. The more ambitious planned protests and conferences and composed strongly worded missives to their local system and interdependency ministers of parliament, saying in no uncertain terms that something should be done, that that's what they were elected for. Then they, too, mostly went back to their lives under the impression that they, at least, had done something. Another group, which might charitably be called entrepreneurs or, less charitably, grifters, saw in the end of the world a business opportunity and began to target the particularly fearful, anxious, and inconsolable. That went as it usually does. A rather smaller group of people looked at the flow streams that were still open, saw how long it would be before it would be impossible to catch a ship to and from where they were, and started making plans to catch those ships at or near the last possible instant, saving up all the while. This crafty bit of foresight was undercut by the fact these people generally did not, in fact, make their reservations paid in full the second they thought of it. It meant that when they did get around to it, they would discover that every passenger berth had been reserved years in advance and at exorbitant rates. After all, these days, when a ship went to end, it stayed at end forever. These people had already missed their chance to escape, and they didn't even know it. They likely couldn't have afforded it anyway. At the local and system levels, governments and their related organizations, populated from the non-noble classes, were beginning to form committees and study groups on the impact of the impending flow collapse and what those would mean to their habitats and cities. Of considerable and particular concern was what would happen to the commodities for which a non-local noble house held the monopoly. To give one less critical example, take citrus fruits, whose monopoly was held by the House of Lagos. In every system, local franchisees grew and sold the fruits, taking their cut of the profits and sending the rest back to Lagos's coffers. In the event that a franchisee decided not to send along a cut, or was just so bad at their job that they never made a profit, all the Lagos fruit stock was genetically encoded to stop producing after a certain number of generations, the number of generations predetermined before the stock was delivered. If the franchisee doesn't pay up, their stock becomes useless. Seeds the fruit produce are sterile. Grafting or cloning won't work. If you think you're going to just easily reverse engineer the stock, well, you can try, and good luck. Just remember that the House of Lagos has been genetically designing and tweaking its stock for literally centuries, with a specific eye on maintaining its monopoly. Re-engineering so much as a lemon from scratch would likely take decades. Now, multiply that problem against everything humans eat, anywhere, including the staples. That's the problem. It was less of a problem when the goal was to tie all known human systems into a web of mutual reliance, ostensibly to lessen the threat of interstellar war and trade conflict, but mostly so that a small number of mercantile families could rent Seek from the rest of humanity in perpetuity. But now that all those systems were about to be on their own, possibly forever, it became a very large, very looming issue. Local and system governments had begun to make overtures to the representatives of the mercantile houses about these monopolies. The general response from the houses was, "Oh, we're looking at this, but we have years to work on this problem, so let's not do anything foolish." Which is to say, the monopolists stalled to their own benefit. The local and system governments, not wanting to start panics before they had to, said nothing outside their own committees and organizations. But again, it's not like the common people didn't know. Some of them, the more ambitious ones, if you'd like to call them that, had already started working the futures markets, placing down markers for the cost of lemons and wheat and beef and every other commodity under the various suns. Others, equally ambitious, figured that the monopolies of the noble families would be broken and shorted these commodities. Some of these people would become immensely rich, to the extent that money would continue to mean anything in the end times, while others would likely find their way to a convenient airlock to end their own self-inflicted suffering. They differed in their opinion as to which would be which. Capitalism was like that. Most others who were thinking ahead at all simply planned to stockpile certain foods. How much? A month, 6 months, a year, depending on available space and personal pessimism. Most of those thinking about stockpiling still had in their brains the idea that the crisis was likely to be a temporary one, and that somewhere along the way, someone would figure out how to keep billions from starving to death in the habitats that would increasingly fall to entropy. To think otherwise would raise the questions of why bother to stockpile at all. Of course, if one wanted to genuinely understand what the over-under line for "we're all genuinely and truly fucked" was, one ought not look at what the lower classes of the interdependency were doing, but rather what their banks were doing. And what the banks were doing, as quietly as possible and without raising too much of a fuss about it, was restructuring their financial services and vehicles to maximize short-term profits and minimize long-term financial risk and exposure, which on one hand was entirely prudent from a fiscal and fiduciary point of view. The interdependency was about to enter a new and entirely unexpected period of change. Banks are inherently conservative entities. It's right there in their name. And so it made good sense to bulk up against uncertainty. On the other hand, it meant that the money had cast its vote on the future, and the vote was to short it. Then there was the matter of the banks beginning to transfer assets to END, which they also did not make a fuss about. There was no reason to, since END was covered by the same financial laws and strictures as the rest of the interdependency. And money was such an abstruse concept anyway. Does it really matter where you say these assets are? But which was also a vote in itself. Most of this bank activity, as intended, went under the radar of the average person. The average person might have appreciated the slightly higher interest rates on their savings accounts, intended to keep them from withdrawing their funds in the short term. And those with long-term notes with banks might have been tempted to take up the offer to refinance to a shorter-term loan, with certain fees waived and interest rates competitive to the longer-term loans. Otherwise, it was business as usual. It did the banks no good to create a panic. They wanted to be sure that when the panic inevitably hit, the majority of their assets would be as far away as possible. The people and their governments would have more immediate things to worry about than the banks returning a fraction of people's accounts, if that, when all the shit finally came crashing down. But what of the Parliament of the Interdependency? The august body that Emperor Greyland II had given 6 months to offer up a plan to deal with the collapse of the flow. What was going down in the House of the People's Representatives? It would be unfair to suggest, as Nadashe Nohamipeeton and Greyland's analysts had both done, that Parliament was merely frittering away on the problem until such time as Greyland took it from them, and then it would be her problem to solve, not theirs. Parliament had, in fact, assembled its best ministers and advisors together to ascertain the scope of the issue and to make suggestions for the Parliament at large to act on. The problem for Parliament's Extraordinary Committee on the Flow Crisis, as it called itself, was that it had come to the same conclusion as everyone else looking at the problem. The vast majority of the people who live in the interdependency were impressively screwed, and there was no easy or comfortable course of action in front of them. The question then became, what percentage was there in the Parliament being the bearer of that sort of bad news? It was not merely an academic question. A not trivial number of parliamentarians had thrown themselves in with the recent coup attempt against the Emperor, which had gone poorly for them and everyone else involved. As a result, the reputation and popularity of the Parliament was at its lowest point in decades, and in perhaps more than a century. This was saying something, as Parliament was almost never popular and was almost always used as a convenient target of ire for local and system governments and their representatives, who were closer to their voting populations and who were always looking for someone else to blame for local problems. These local and system governments and representatives, not to mention the noble houses and mercantile guilds, would be delighted to have the interdependency parliament be the focus of their constituents' and stakeholders' ire. It wouldn't be so bad for the Emperor, either. The young Emperor had become a favorite of her subjects for having survived two assassination attempts and a coup, and for claiming the religious mantle of the Emperor in a way that none of her predecessors had since the days of Raikela I, the founder of the interdependency. Any further denigration of the Parliament worked to her advantage. That being the case, the Extraordinary Committee, with no plan that didn't end in the slow death of billions and no easy way to sell that outcome, was coming to the conclusion that its best course of action was to delay, take the relatively small hit for indecision, and let the Emperor take the rather larger hit for being the bearer of the impressively bad news. Greyland had popularity to burn. Let her burn all of it. In the meantime, the members of the Extraordinary Committee would book the rides to End that their constituents assumed would be available to them a few years into the future. Oh yes, End. The one exception to the doom that awaits every other system of the interdependency. The one system with a planet where humans could walk upon its surface without a suit of one sort or another, where the land would welcome them instead of turn them into desiccated husks, where the sun would warm their unprotected faces instead of blasting them with unmediated radiation scrambling DNA, the one place where humanity could still survive. Well, except for the fact that the people of End were aware of what was coming for them, a sudden and overwhelming wave of refugees from the rest of the interdependency whose sheer numbers would outstrip the planet's ability to absorb them. The question was not whether they would come. They were coming. They were already on their way. The question was how many. Whether it would be millions, which would strain the planet, or billions, which would destroy it. And hey, there was that whole Civil War thing going on, which made it difficult for anyone to prepare. It did, however, make it easier for some to do other things. The Civil War was largely focused on the major cities and some strategic transport hubs and routes. In outlying provinces, enterprising farmers were claiming lands they didn't technically own and preparing them for crops and ranching. This was every bit of the ecological nightmare that one might expect. But inasmuch as the acting Duke of End was busy not having his head delivered to Vrenna Claremont, no one was stopping them. And anyway, the farmers and ranchers rationalized it by noting that they were planning and raising the few native crops and animals that could be eaten by humans, which is to say, the only foodstuffs that had not been genetically engineered to sustain a monopoly. These farmers and ranchers weren't wrong about that, which did not actually mitigate either the land grab or the pall of the sky as thousands of square kilometers burned away End's ecosystems in exchange for acreage that would not come close to feeding and sustaining the millions to billions who would be on their way. Which was pointed out to some of these ambitious farmers and ranchers, who said, basically,
Sure, but it'll be years yet. Someone will figure this out, and when they do, I'll be rich. And thus, it was in the interdependency, in the early but not all that early anymore days of the flow collapse. Everyone knew what was coming. Some even prepared and planned. But at the end of it, everyone assumed that something or someone would come along to save the civilization that they lived in and could not conceive of actually disappearing. Something or someone would come along to save them. They would be saved along with everyone else. It was a nice thought. It wasn't true. At the very least, not yet. Chapter 9. Give me a second, Cardenia said to Mars. The two of them were in the Emperor's personal office, where, Mars suddenly remembered, the two of them had first met, not all that long ago. In the now, they were alone, briefly, in the short interregnum between Cardenia's assistants leaving the office and them returning with the Emperor's next appointment in tow. Mars nodded. Getting into character?
It's not a character, it's me, Cardenia said. And, yes. Now hush.
Mars grinned at this and watched as Cardenia closed her eyes, took a deep breath, and did her transformation into Emperor Greyland II. To the outside eye, the transformation wasn't much, a straightening of the spine and a certain set of the face. But by this time, Mars had seen it enough that he understood that most of the transformation was interior, the change of perspective from personal me to imperial we. When Mars had first gotten to know the Emperor, which is to say in the period of time where they had become friends but had not yet become lovers, he thought the transformation a little bit amusing. Now he realized how much it was actually necessary, not just for Cardenia to define for herself the difference between her personal self and her public role, but for everyone else she ever dealt with. It was easy for people to dismiss Cardenia Wu Patrick, the young woman accidentally thrown into a position that she had neither wanted nor been groomed for. It was much harder to dismiss Emperor Greyland II. Well, harder now, Mars amended. It took a while, and the arrest for treason of roughly a third of the Interdependency's ruling class, but Greyland had gotten there. Mars smiled to himself at this. He was pretty proud of his girlfriend. Greyland noticed the smile.
What is it?
I'll tell you later, Your Majesty, Mars said. When Cardenia was in Greyland mode, he made sure to treat her with the same level of courtesy as anyone else in her court. Maybe other imperial boyfriends in history used their position to be casual and louche, but that wasn't Mars. He wasn't sure he could be louche if he tried. Greyland nodded and motioned toward the door.
These two will not be enthusiastic about what we are going to ask of them, she said.
Mars knew the we here referred not to the two of them, but to Greyland alone. Mars was support staff. You're asking a lot of them, he said.
Yes, well,
Greyland said, and shifted her gaze to where her new guests would soon be entering.
We'll be asking a lot of everyone. They will be no different.
Yes, ma'am, Mars said. Greyland glanced over briefly at him, a small and private smile on her lips. Mars knew that she liked it when he went all formal. A door opened, and Admiral Ginny Hernan and General Luke Bren were brought in. Hernan ran the Imperial Navy. Bren ran the Imperial Marines. Normally, the two were attended by flocks of staff and body people. For this meeting, it was just the two of them. After introductions and pleasantries, Greyland's staff also disappeared, leaving only the military heads, the Emperor, and Mars. Mars watched as Hernan and Bren glanced briefly his way and equally as quickly turned their attention back to the Emperor. He had been introduced as Lord Mars Claremont, and his role as the Emperor's science advisor on matters regarding the flow was well known. It was also well known, if not generally publicly acknowledged, that he was the Emperor's friend, with all the various social complications, positive and negative, that came with that particular position. This did not trouble Mars especially, he got it, but it meant he was having a moment of quiet amusement watching these two immensely powerful people trying to figure out why he was present at this meeting. The three of them were three of the most powerful humans in the known universe. His presence at the meeting was either an Emperor's affectation or something else entirely.
Mars enjoyed watching Hernan and Bren trying to figure out which it was.
They'll find out soon enough, Mars thought.
And as it happened, they found out almost immediately.
We need to send an armada to End, Greyland said to her military chiefs. Sooner rather than later.
Hernan and Bren shifted uncomfortably in their seats and looked at each other before Admiral Hernan cleared her throat.
There is a problem with that, Your Majesty, she said. You are going to tell us that the prophecies of Raykella will destroy any ship that emerges out of the flow at End, Greyland prompted.
Yes, Hernan agreed, and not just the Raykella. After the coup attempt against you, Navy commanders who were complicit fled to End with their ships and crews. There are now 13 additional ships of various sizes and capabilities on their way to End, all presumably loyal to the Nohama Peton family.
More than enough to monitor and defend every existing incoming flow shoal, Your Majesty, said Bren.
And we could not overpower them by numbers or arms? Greyland asked.
It would be difficult, Hernan said.
That is what we are told when someone wants to say no to us but feels they cannot.
Yes, Hernan said, but this time I actually mean it.
Then define difficult.
Ships, mines, shoal defenses, all deployed against anything that arrives within seconds. Civilian ships will be destroyed almost instantly. Our ships will survive initial contact, but if the rebel ship commanders are smart, and they are, we trained them, they will take our ships apart in short order.
Can we not coordinate to have our ships arrive at the same time?
And present too many targets to destroy them all at once?
Hernan shook her head.
No, flow shoals aren't wide enough to accommodate more than one or two ships at most, and even ships that leave hub space simultaneously may not arrive simultaneously. It's not an exact science.
Greyland glanced over at Mars at this. Mars knew why she did, and it was a little moment between the two of them, but neither of them said anything about it.
So, we are abandoning End to the Nohama Petons, she said to Hernan.
No, ma'am, Hernan replied crisply.
But neither do we wish to commit our forces and ships to a plan that will expose both to unnecessarily high rates of attrition. You don't want your people to die.
Not if we can avoid it, ma'am.
Can you avoid it?
We're working on that.
Maybe we can help, Greyland said.
At this, Mars noticed something the Emperor had told him she was entirely expecting. A pair of tolerant and amused, and perhaps maybe just a little condescending, smiles on the faces of her chiefs. Hernan and Bren had momentarily stopped seeing Greyland and saw Cardenia instead.
We are always open to suggestion, Your Majesty, Hernan said.
Greyland turned to Mars.
Tell them.
Just after the attempted coup, I mentioned to the Emperor that I might have found a way to sneak into End, Mars said to the chiefs.
What?
General Bren said, confused. As the flow streams are collapsing, some new ones are opening. Temporary streams, through a phenomenon I and my late colleague, Hatid Roinald, called evanescence. These new streams last anywhere from minutes to years. My predictive models suggest an evanescent flow stream will be opening up into End.
Your predictive models?
Yes, when I first mentioned it to the Emperor, I had just newly modeled the data and my confidence in it was not high. I've worked on it since. My confidence is higher now.
How much more confident?
Confident enough that I would take a ship into it myself.
Lord Mars was the one who discovered the emergent flow stream to Dalla Cisla, Greyland said. He has since predicted other new streams, whose existences have been confirmed by local scientists. If he has high confidence in a prediction, we trust him.
Admiral Hernan had a brief expression cross her face, quickly removed, but nevertheless one that Mars registered. He knew it was, of course you're confident in his prediction, you're fucking him. Mars looked over to Greyland and noticed she'd caught it too, and that she didn't appreciate it even as she realized it was entirely fair.
Of course, neither Lord Mars nor we expect you to take our word for it. Lord Mars's data will be available for your own scientists to examine and verify.
Who else has seen it? Hernan asked.
No one, Mars said. When I informed the Emperor about it, she asked me to separate out that information from the data I was sharing with other scientists.
No one else has that particular data, and no one else's models have that particular evanescent flow stream appearing.
Unless someone else has seen it and kept it to themselves like you did, Bren said.
Mars nodded. That's possible.
The one thing I would say here is that for better or worse, every scientist working the data is working off models my father originated and that I refined. I know what the hole in my own public data looks like and how it affects the models derived from it. It's very small, mathematically speaking, but it's there. I'd notice if someone was hiding the same data I was. I'd see it in the models.
You're confident of that?
Marsh shrugged. It's just math.
You understand that the fate of dozens of ships and thousands of my people will be riding on your math, Hernan said.
It's more than that, Admiral, Grayland said. It's the fate of billions.
Yes, ma'am, Hernan accepted the correction.
However, it will be my people's fate first.
Grayland nodded. If Lord Mars's data is satisfactory, then how long will it take to assemble the ships and plan a campaign?
Hernan turned to Mars.
In your model, where does the flow stream originate, and what's the transit time?
It originates in the Ikoyi system, Mars said.
That's the home system of House of Lagos, Bren said.
Yes.
Does this present issues, General? Grayland asked.
They're touchy. Let us handle that part, Grayland suggested. Bren smiled at this. Yes, Your Majesty. The transit time to end would be 3 months, Mars continued. Hernan's eyebrows raised.
Really?
The trip from hub to end was a 9-month journey. There's a catch, Mars warned.
What is it?
I predict the flow stream from Ikoyi to end will only be open for about 5 months.
When does it open?
About 3 weeks from now. And we don't want to be in the flow stream when it shuts off, Bren said. No, Mars said. Some flow streams collapse from one end or the other. Others collapse intermittently. Others collapse all at once. This will be one of those collapse all at once ones.
Hernan turned to Grayland.
What I'm hearing is, at best, we have 3 months to assemble and task a group suitable to retake end before that stream collapses and takes any ship still inside with it.
Yes, Grayland said.
Is it possible?
It's difficult.
There's that word again, Mars thought.
Grayland had noticed it too.
That is not what we asked, she said.
Hernan grimaced. I understand that, ma'am.
Then let us be clear, Admiral Hernan, General Bren, Grayland said, fixing both with her eyes as she said their names.
We have no intention of leaving end to the Nohamapetans. They are a threat to the current citizens of the planet, and they are a threat to anyone who flees there for refuge. Those refugees are already on their way, Admiral. There will be many more before all this is done. If this is possible, then we will have it done, difficult or not.
It's possible, Your Majesty, Bren said. But with all respect, you have to be aware of what you're asking. You're asking for a massive and sudden commitment of forces that will have to be assembled from the systems we can reach and which can send ships and personnel to the Ikoyi system in time to use the flow stream before it collapses. Every ship, every marine, every crew member we send to end is taking a one-way trip. They are not going to see their spouses or families or children again. Everyone who joins the service understands they are making a commitment, one that takes them from home, sometimes for years. But Your Majesty, what you're asking here is for more than a commitment, in a very real sense. You're asking them to give their lives.
Grayland considered this.
You think there will be mutinies over this order?
Bren looked as if he'd been slapped. I said no such thing, ma'am. The last bit of that was added hastily. Mars noted that Grayland deigned to let it pass.
It's not only the crews and marines, ma'am, Hernan said. Those ships aren't coming back either.
She turned to Mars. Unless you predict a flow stream exiting end space in the near future.
I don't, Mars said.
Hernan nodded. Then there are that many fewer ships we have for the unrest we all know is coming.
We can make more ships, Grayland said.
Your cousins are filling up their dance card quickly, Hernan said, referring to the House of Wu.
We're sure they are, Grayland said dryly.
However, we can make the argument that the needs of the Imperial Navy take precedence.
As for the crews and Marines, Grayland turned her attention back to Bren.
If we cannot return them to their families, then perhaps we should bring their families to them.
You're talking about sending these families to end, Hernan said.
Yes.
After a suitable amount of time, that would be required to end the Nohamapitan threat and to establish stability on End. The logistics of that are difficult, yes, Greyland finished the sentence, as will be the logistics of creating the fleet that we send to End. Admiral, General, please understand that we do not expect any of this to be simple or easy. Likewise, understand that moving forward, we do not expect anything to be simple or easy. We all have difficult choices to make and sacrifices that will be required of all of us. Perhaps you will be so kind as to lead by example.
Yes. Well, Hernan and Bren looked at each other again and then rose from their seats. We need to go find out what ships and people are available to us on short notice. We will have that to you by morning. Thank you, Admiral, Greyland said. Hernan nodded to Mars.
And you will send us over that data for our people to check. We need to go over that with a microscope.
Yes, of course.
You understand that if our people find anything questionable with your data, we can't move forward.
Mars nodded. If your people have any questions, I will be happy to address them.
The Admiral gave Mars a look that he was pretty sure translated as, you better